tuned to Tidings, and I'm Hazel Kahn. My guest today is Adam Aloni, coming to us via Skype from Jerusalem. Adam is a researcher for a very important Israeli human rights organization, B'Tselem. Welcome to Tidings and to WPKN Radio, Adam. Please tell our listeners about your work.
Well, B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center, we're a civil society organization with a mission to bring factual information, data, and analysis on the everyday reality under occupation. And we believe that the human rights violations will not stop until the occupation is stopped, which is the root problem. We're not affiliated with any party, political party or movement, but this is all political action, of course. We were established in 1989 in the midst of the First Intifada, where there was a great need for factual, accurate, verified information about the human rights violation conducted under the occupation of Palestinians in the occupied territories. And since then, we have been documenting reality on the ground, analyzing it, and bringing information both to Israeli society and to the international community with an aim in mind to bring the occupation to an end. We have many different projects that we're working on, a network of field researchers and volunteers that are Palestinians that live in the communities that which we cover. We have a video camera project. More than 200 video cameras are handed out to individual Palestinians and family. And they bring to us documentation of reality as they see it, of everyday life under occupation. And so all of this sent to the world and to Israeli public, so everybody can know the reality under occupation and the reasons why they should help to stop it. Our information is published on our website, B'Tselem.org.
I was just wondering if you have difficulty as an organization, do you have pushback from the Israeli authorities, from the Israeli public, any violence?
I'll put it like this. Area for civil society in Israel is shrinking. And this is not happening only in Israel. It's a trend that we can see in many different countries around the world. But definitely we can see a more harsh rhetoric by the government. And this also influences the atmosphere, the public atmosphere towards human rights organizations that oppose government policies. But I'll tell you that I come to work every day and I do my work and I write against occupation and I speak against the occupation. And I come home and then I come back to work again. And this is because I'm a Jewish Israeli citizen of my country. But between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, where 13 million people live, this is all the area under Israeli control. Only 8 million people in this area have a right to vote, and I am one of them. The other millions of people live under military rule in the West Bank, a rigid military rule by Israel, and in Gaza under siege. So for us, we still enjoy these privileges of being citizens of a Western country. But many of us working in B'Tselem are Palestinians. But for me personally and my Jewish-Israeli colleagues, although the space for civil society is shrinking, we still enjoy all of our rights. But also we have many field workers, Palestinian colleagues, that do live in different areas of the West Bank, in the areas which we cover, and in Gaza. And they bring to us all of the data about the everyday reality on the ground. And also we have a wide network of volunteers. As you well know, 60% of the West Bank was defined in the agreement, the Oslo Accords, as Area C. This was supposed to be for 5 years only, but it's still valid till today. All of Area C, 60% of the West Bank, Israel treats it as if it was its own territory for its own ends. All of the land reserves of the Palestinians are. This is where all of their agricultural lands are. This is where all Israeli settlements are. And the areas saved for their future expansion. So as Israelis, for me to go there, I will not even feel that there is a border. There is the occupation project and the settlement project has been very effective in the way to give Israelis the feel that there is no disconnection. And I can just go and cross to the West Bank whenever I wish. Palestinians living in the areas designated as areas A and B, These are 165 territorial islands left in the West Bank, which are not contiguous as Area C is, but are disconnected. For them to move, not to Israel, which they are not allowed to enter, but between the city of Nablus and the city of Ramallah, for example. For them to move between the villages and towns, it's very hard because they have to go through Area C. So even if somebody has never seen a map in their lifetime, every Palestinian knows every border, every checkpoint, whether it's official or not.
This is the background that you've given us. Now, in that context, your most recent report, or the one that we're going to be talking about today, Made in Israel, Exploiting Palestinian Land for Treatment of Israeli Waste. Why don't you talk about the report?
So we virtually never deal with environmental issues. And similarly, environmental organizations in Israel virtually never touch issues that concern human rights in the occupied territories. But this report is unique in the sense that it shows how interconnected these two issues are, because exploiting its power as the occupying force in the West Bank, and the fact that the Palestinian population is completely excluded from the decision-making process, Israel has turned the West Bank into a garbage dump. It diverts a significant part of the waste and hazardous substances produced within its own borders for treatment in the West Bank. Our report shows that Israel facilitated the establishment of 15 different waste treatment facilities throughout the West Bank. Six of the facilities handle hazardous materials, mostly produced inside Israel. The kinds of hazardous materials that are processed in these factories include infectious medical waste, used oils, used solvents, metals, used batteries, and electronic industry byproducts, as well as others. And all of these facilities, they pose hazards and danger both to environmental risks and for health of the people that live in proximity. As you well know, populations determine who enjoys access to resources and who suffers from exposure to the waste produced from the use of these resources. And so Israel effectively has it both ways, also enjoys increasing the amount of waste that it treats, but it actually does so by pollutions onto Palestinian land and people. So I told you before that Israel did not officially annex Area C, but it treats it as its own. And this is the real trick that Israel enjoys and the Palestinians suffer, because it created legal mechanisms, one inside Israel and one in the West Bank. Israeli waste treatment facilities operating in the West Bank do not have to comply, for example, the Clean Air Act. Even the Israel government doesn't have the legal tools for clean air regulations on the facilities working in the West Bank. So just imagine the competitive advantage of a metal waste treatment facility that operates in the West Bank compared with a metal treatment facility that operates in Israel under stringent environmental regulations, like any other country. Waste treatment facilities in the West Bank also do not have to report on the amounts of waste they get. They don't have to report how they tried to treat them and how they tried to mitigate the hazardous effect and the pollutants they release to the atmosphere. So Israel allows them to work in the darkness without transparency at all. And this is not the case for waste treatment facilities operating within Israel's sovereign borders. When Israel reports to the OECD or the EU, according to environmental agreements that it shares with other developed countries, it reports the amount of waste that it treats, and that the numbers that they put out do include the waste treated in those facilities that it operates in the West Bank. So, of course, it enjoys, like, look, we are increasing our waste treatment operations, but part in which the Palestinians have to suffer disproportionate of the environmental burden because of Israel policy, this is not said, of course. And this report is the first time that this issue is made public.
What about the transfer of waste from Israel into the West Bank? Is that environmentally sound, what they're doing?
Yeah, it's usually trucked. All industry sectors and from hospitals, from sewage sludge treatment to the West Bank. There is not modern regulation on or enforcement of regulation of transfer of waste, both in Israel and in the regulation that Israel imposed in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
There can be hazardous waste incidents in the transfer. There's a potential for that.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't documented any. I'll just give you a sense of the extent of the phenomenon, though, of how much waste is being transferred. So, according to the Ministry of Environmental Protection, 60% of the sludge produced in Israel in 2015 was used to make fertilizer, compost. Mm-hmm. Roughly 60% of all sewage sludge converted to fertilizer in 2015 was processed at the compost ore facility, which is in the Jordan Valley in the West Bank. There were other large facilities in Israel, operating in Israel, but two of the large ones, they closed because the people living in the villages around it said the smell pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So they were shut, and their business was moved to the compost ore facility in the West Bank because their people don't have the political voice or the power. They don't even have the right to vote or to know about this operation. Of course, they know because they smell it, but this is how much waste is being transferred. It's tons and tons and tons of waste.
What kind of health consequences have you been reporting? Or
those waste treatment facilities do not have to report on the amount of waste and the type of treatment, and so the lack of data makes it very difficult to make a correlation between what people say that they feel or their illnesses in Palestinian villages and towns, between that and the activity of the factories without data. Most likely exists. If it doesn't exist, it has to start being collected. I mean, waste shouldn't be transferred to the West Bank. This is a violation of international law. And so we cannot talk about concrete illnesses that are caused because of these facilities. But we do know, particularly of hazardous waste, could potentially result in spread of pathogens, carcinogens of pharmaceutical drugs, and long-term damage to water resources, soil, as well as fauna and flora, the odor, the air pollution.
This is really just another manifestation of occupation policy, that the Palestinians don't really count, so they don't have to be taken into consideration. Gaza, can you talk about that?
The waste treatment in the West Bank is indeed one more facet of the exploitative policy Israel for 50 years now, using Palestinian space and people to further own interests. One of the things Israel has been also persistent with is a fragmentation of Palestinian space and Palestinian people. So Palestinians in the West Bank and Palestinians living in East Jerusalem and Palestinians living in Gaza and within these areas, Israel has been persistent in its effort to fragment them. So people living in those three areas of shattered Palestinian space all have a different status which Israel put on them and different type of regulations that Israel policy imposes on them. Palestinians in East Jerusalem have a blue ID and can move freely in Israel but are not allowed to vote for the parliament. Palestinians in the West Bank live under military rule, and in Gaza, they live under Israeli siege. Now, this siege that has been going on for 10 years now in Gaza has created a situation that people are living for years now on the verge of an extreme humanitarian crisis. Almost 2 million people there are not allowed to get into Gaza or leave Gaza without Israel permit. Israel controls the airspace. Israel controls the maritime line. Israel controls even electronic communications in Gaza. And also Israel does not allow bring into Gaza, or it regulates it very heavily, products that it considers as dual use. Now that includes products that are necessary for building urban systems such as sewage and building housing protection to sustain hospitals and sanitation facilities and so forth. All of these urban systems in Gaza are under extreme stress and are collapsing. Now, you have to bear in mind that during these 10 years of siege on Gaza, there have been three massive Israeli military operations in Gaza that have brought vast destruction. We're talking about thousands of deaths and injuries, mm-hmm. including 500 children casualties. In those three military operations in Gaza, urban systems, including water, sanitation infrastructure, hospitals, schools, and so forth, have really suffered. Of course, the rebuilding efforts have been very slow because, as I said, Israel controls all of the products that can enter Gaza. And to end Gaza, they have very severe health risks, environmental risks. More than 96% of the water in Gaza is unfit for human consumption. The UN said that by 2020, Gaza may no longer be livable for human beings. People today live in very extreme, harsh conditions. No foreseeable future of improving their conditions. Israel policy is sustaining a situation in Gaza of extreme neglect and extreme decay that people have to live with.
Adam Aloni is talking to us on Skype from Jerusalem. This is Tidings on WPKN Radio.
Let's go back to the report. I've always been interested in understanding how the average Israeli, Jewish Israeli citizen, how do they live with knowing that this is what Israel's doing, whether it's in Gaza, whether it's in the West Bank? How do they reduce the dissonance, the conflict between what they must know and who they think they are as Israelis, as humans?
We do almost yearly surveys of public opinion. We try to see how many people are receptive to our messages in Israel. Mm. How they understand the human rights issues in the occupied territories. We can talk about 5 to 10% of Israeli citizens affiliate themselves with left-wing human rights ideas. Mm-hmm. This is our direct audience that listen to us and update themselves with the information that we put out in Israel. There are perhaps another 10% who are receptive, but maybe let's say ideological, towards the left. And the rest of Israel has the rhetoric and the ideas have gone further to the right than always. Now, it's very important to remember that consecutive Israel governments have all, both from the left and the right, contribute to the settlement enterprise and to the occupation and maintaining Palestinians under occupation. So this is the reality that all of us grew into. And for people who do not engage with these issues, like us at B'Tselem, which is very rare to mm-hmm. be in contact with Palestinians from a personal experience, the only way that they do get to have contact with Palestinians is when they're 18 years old and they get uniform and join the military. Mm-hmm. Now, this immediately creates a notion of enemy, of fear in both sides. Mm-hmm. But as an Israeli, I can say that today, more than ever, the Israeli government talks about Palestinians as terrorists. Any Palestinian is potentially a terrorist and a threat. And human rights activists as traitors and people in the international community who criticize Israeli governmental policy as anti-Semites. Mm. This rhetoric does influence, of course, the way many people understand. There is a tendency to not even think about what is happening in Gaza, in the West Bank. And this is part of what we understood in B'Tselem in the past few years. We thought originally when B'Tselem was founded that if we bring this factual information to the Israeli public will act by its own volition to bring the occupation to an end. Mm. Now, this is evidently not the case. So we strongly believe, and this is a strategic shift, that there is a more than ever pressing need to advocate in the international arena and to tell the international community and their delegates that decisive action, concrete actions are needed in order for balance to pay, the cost-benefit balance that people pay in Israel and in the occupied Palestinian territories, it has to be shifted. Because as a Jewish Israeli, I can continue living for another 50 years comfortably in Tel Aviv and not even think about the occupation if I don't want to. If I go into the West Bank, somehow all of the privileges of a citizen in a democratic country is handed out to settlers in a land which is not their own, while Palestinians around them are deprived of any right. Of course, many people think that it's a good thing and Palestinians should be oppressed if they resist it. And it's something that most Israelis today, unfortunately, live with and agree with or ignore. You know, something that happens after 50 years of occupation.
I was thinking as you're talking that in a way there's no need for the wall anymore. Because there is a wall that's all around now, but it's built out of this denial and this shutting one's eyes to the reality. The wall was built in order to protect people, terrorists, from coming in to the country. But now there's really no need because occupation has done the same job.
This was the official reason for building the separation barrier. The Israeli government said that they're building the separation barrier to not to control the entrance of Palestinians to Israel for security reasons. But what happened a moment after, when the wall started to be built in 2002, is that we saw that it's actually built not inside Israel or in the borders between Israel and the West Bank, but it's built mostly in the West Bank, in a meandering way that disconnects from the West Bank more than 9% of its territory and leaves it on the Israeli side of the wall. Now, this area is where most settlements are and where most settlers live. So behind the official reason, which is a security reason, was actually a more strategic intent for creating another fact on Palestinian ground that in any other future agreement, this area would be kept to Israel. But of course, now with the government, the most extreme right-wing government we ever had, now are speaking about annexing all of Area C or all of the West Bank. So this, in a sense, makes the separation barrier indeed bit less relevant, redundant, yeah. I think Israel knows the status quo is the most sustainable solution for Israel. It's very comfortable for us. And this comfort balance has to be shifted.
You haven't mentioned the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement. I mean, that is an attempt at making Israel accountable.
B'Tselem does not have an opinion about pro-BDS or against BDS. It's a legitimate way of struggle, but have an opinion for BDS or against BDS. Infringing on people's right to enter Israel or to speak because they are pro-BDS, another non-democrat, promoting human rights. More than ever, we are pointing out that the occupation itself is the reason for human rights violations. And as long as it exists, Israel will be breaching every day the international law, and people will suffer greatly one way or another. There's no enlightened occupation. I tell you what it's done to Israel. Though we have been occupying Palestinians for 50 years, Israel is still a member of this club called Modern Democracies. This is how we are treated in the world. But like I said, between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River, 13 million people live and only 8 million have the right to vote. Israel cannot and should not be considered a democracy. And this has to be made explicit by every country that has relationship with Israel, that we cannot keep on occupying people under military rule for another year and keep on being treated as a democratic state. It's important to remember every settlement, every road, every measure to coerce Palestinians was firstly part of the Israeli governmental policy throughout the years, governments from the left and the right. And more than that, every step was sanctioned by the Supreme Court of Israel. I mean, the Supreme Court of Justice in Israel gave legal stamp for settlements, for the separation barrier, which the International Criminal Court says is illegal, for home demolitions of Palestinians, for arrests of Palestinian minors. Everything has a legal stamp for Israel. So this guise of legality, every human rights violation is going through due process. This is one of the veneers that Israel created to present itself as a democratic state. But, you know, when a Palestinian minor is brought in front of Israeli a military judge in uniform, military uniform, it's impossible to have this kind of justice system. It's the whitewash, you know. And so this is one veneer. And the second veneer is, of course, that everything is temporary. The occupation is temporary. The wall is temporary. The settlements are temporary. 50 years of temporariness. The definition of occupation is a temporary military hold after a war. But of course, every fact that Israel stamps on Palestinian ground is making it less temporary.
What will end the occupation?
In the end, it will have to be an agreement signed by Palestinians and Israelis to end the occupation, and Palestinians will be able to be free and enjoy full human rights, including their collective rights for self-determination. But as Israel can end the occupation today, if it wishes to, what we've come to realize is that the Israeli public will not move towards this direction by its own volition. As long as we don't feel the burden of occupation, as long as you don't pay a price for it, we won't move towards that direction. We won't end the occupation. This is really where the UN resolution has to be translated into action. I don't know exactly what measures need to be taken because it's not our expertise to know the multilateral sphere of interest between nations today. But every country, and in the United States, they know the leverages that they can play. But they decide so far not to. And refusing to act is ushering in another 50 years of occupation that would be more violent than the past 50 years.
Even if the occupation were to end, the impact and the influence of being occupiers for 50 years will always now be part of Israeli history and culture and psychology. So even when it's lifted, it's not really lifted. I just wanted to say that.
You know, decades ago, Professor Yishalev said that occupation corrupts. Of course, you know, our collective consciousness is Israel is a nation occupying another nation for 50 years. Of course, it corrupts. What I can say, though, and I did say, is that we can keep on living comfortably as Jewish Israelis and keep on with our lives. Maintaining the status quo is the most dangerous thing. Because if I don't want to read about the occupation without human rights, I won't know about it.
Not a subject of conversation, unless you're part of the 10 or maybe 20% of left-leaning Israelis who do think about it. I hope we made clear about this report. Could you just mention it again?
This report, Made in Israel, Exploiting Palestinian Land for Treatment of Israeli Waste. This is a report that is on our website at B'Tselem.org.
Very good. Thank you very much, Adam Aloni, for casting a lot of light, I hope, on the situation in the West Bank and in Gaza through this report and through all your B'Tselem activities. I look forward to talking to you again in a few months to see what's shifted.
Gladly, of course. Thank you, Hazel.
That was Adam Aloni talking to us about B'Tselem's work to end the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land. Adam spoke to us on Skype from Jerusalem. You can hear future tidings on the second Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. and download all earlier tidings programs as podcasts from iTunes and hazelkahn.com. Tidings is produced by Tony Ernst.